All right, welcome everybody. We are back after a week break. We are in our new podcasting studios. We're actually in the old executive corner of our Fox 5 studio. So if you ever hear a beep or someone throwing an F-bomb on the street, that's because we actually have windows and a view on the world, which is really cool. We're going to do our best work up in our new temporary location while the podcast section of our building gets renovated. So this is kind of fun for us to be up here with a nice view of the Upper East Side. So my guest today is someone I followed on social media for a long time, since the beginning of her blog. Her name's Holly. She runs Nantucket Black Book, which is basically a guide to the island. And her and I have managed to do the near impossible, which is to follow each other in a relationship that is 99% virtual. I'll say hi when she was bartending in the island, and that was really the extent of it. But we actually grew to become, I think, real friends and to appreciate each other more through social media, which is a miracle. I say that just because typically how many people have you followed and liked them more after a year being exposed to their Instagram posts or whatnot? Probably not too many. She knows so much about social media. She's actually made it her full-time job. When you check out her Instagram account, I think it's a great place to start, Nantucket Black Book. You'll see what it's about. And I really wanted to get her voice on here because she sheds a lot of insight that I find very useful, and I think you will too. Without further ado, here is Holly Finnegan from Nantucket Black Book.
From New York City, USA, welcome to the Fox 5 Podcast Network.
Hello.
Take two with Holly Finnegan. What's going on?
Oh, Steve, how you been?
Good. We got things. Everything is worked out. We had such a good conversation. We had to call you again and make sure we could share it with all our listeners. I'm excited to talk to you again. So first off, what's the deal in Nantucket? Did you get hit with snow or anything like that?
Oh, my God. It's been some wild weather around here, although I don't think we have it nearly as bad as many places. Like, we have some wind. We have zero snow. And my dad lives in Concord, Mass, and he just sent me a photo of what looks like he's going to be shoveling until probably 2020.
Wow.
So, I think we're doing okay. We had some wild wind last week.
Oh, last week was crazy. It was like the entire eastern seaboard was just getting walloped. It was nuts. Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing about living on Nantucket. You know, you live in a place where you're not sheltered from these storms. Mm-hmm. So snow doesn't really sit. It just blows into the ocean. And we're not really protected by so many trees, so things can get really wild pretty quick. And, you know, the boats stop running here on Nantucket when there's 25-mile-hour winds, and the planes stop running at 40. And last week, we had 90-mile-hour winds.
Oh, my God.
So you can understand there was no boats, no planes, no Walmart, no Wendy's out here, no way off after 10.
Right. No, that's hardcore. That's off-season in Nantucket. You know, the one time I thought I was going to die in a plane, I remember it. This was when I was working at Channel 5 in Boston. It was the weekend of Ted Kennedy's funeral. Somehow, like, the final day of it, I actually got off because everyone was working. And I flew in on one of those, you know, Puddle Jump or Cape Air flights in the craziest storm ever, and I was on it with like a bunch of teenagers, and they were hooting and hollering, and I was actually the old guy sitting there being like, oh my God, I'm gonna die in this. There's no way this plane is not going down. I still don't know how it made it there. It was the scariest thing in my life.
Those moments when you're like, oh my God, are my affairs in order? What's the last of my browsing history? Like, oh my
did I hit clear history before I left? Oh no.
Exactly. My parents are gonna know about my credit card.
I know. That's
exactly the opposite of what I was hoping for. You know what?
Totally.
Those flights are like Volkswagen buses in the air. So
those things are unbelievable. Right. When you're in a plane where they have to sort you by your weight, you're like, whoa, this is heavy duty.
Oh, totally. And by heavy duty, I mean, you hear these women and they're like, hey, what's your weight? And then, 130. And then all of a sudden, Jim Carrey and Liar Liar goes, yeah, in your bra.
I know.
I'm like, I'm not going down because this lady lied about the weight. Thank
you. I know. They must know to just add like 15 pounds to everyone's weight. They're like, okay,
totally.
She said that.
Totally.
This means this. So you are. So you, you are year-round Nantucketer now. And how long have you lived on the island year-round?
So I've been on the island 14 summers, but I've lived here year-round since 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So, just going into my, like, you know, eighth winter or so.
Gotcha. So how I met you, you were bartending. It's like 08, 09, I don't know, whatever. And then you started Nantucket Black Book, which is your Instagram page, which has then grown into Facebook, Twitter, social marketing, etc. And you Walk me through the evolution of sort of going from being behind the bar, telling people where the best places to eat, shop are, et cetera, to now doing that for your full-time career on Nantucket, which you love.
Definitely. So a little backstory on how I got out here. My big sister and my sorority in college is a Nantucket native. So when we graduated from the University of New Hampshire, shout out Wildcats, back in 2005, she was like, oh, you should come live with my family and spend the summer with me and you can work in the restaurant industry down here. Because being a bartender on Nantucket is like being a white-collar stripper. It's like, how do you walk away from that money?
Totally.
So I worked in Nantucket for seasonal for the first 4 years. So I would live here from kind of April through December and then travel for 4 months every winter. I lived in St. John in 07. I traveled New Zealand in 08. I was in Maui, Hawaii in 2009 and Argentina and Uruguay in 2010. And then I started to live here year-round in 2010 as my mom had gotten sick and I decided, you know, I just didn't want to be as far away from home, but I still wanted to have an ocean separating me from everyone. So that's where Nantucket came from. So basically, I was bartending and I was writing. I started a blog back in 2008 about what it was like to be single on Nantucket. It was called the Nantucket Black Book. It was like all of my truth back then, where I was very free to write things that I wouldn't dare put on the internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
but also, it was like, you know, it was before blogs became what they were today. Like when people would say that, you know, are you a blogger? I'd be like, oh yeah, I'm a blogger. Now somebody is like, you're a blogger. I'd be like, please do not use that term to me. But I also, you know, what happened with my blog was that I used to promote the blog through social media because when I was a senior in college, so 2005, Facebook launched at University of New Hampshire as one of the first 300 schools.
Oh, wow.
So basically, I've grown up with social media more under a professional light than a personal one.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you're graduating from college, everyone's giving you that kind of heads up, like, hey, you know, be careful what you put out there. You know, people can Google you at this point, and you want to make sure that you're not being a total idiot online.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a lot of, you know, like respect for anybody in our age range that was able to kind of see social media as not just a social thing, but actually a professional thing.
Right.
Unfortunately, I also have a lot of sympathy for the younger generation for not understanding what kind of digital imprint they're making on the web as well, not realizing that things like Snapchat don't actually go away. Because people have something called memories and you can't get rid of those. So anyways, to make a long story short, I was, as a bartender, I was always personal.
Holly, I go to Nantucket to get rid of my memories. I got to disagree with you there. I make all my memories go away for a week at a time, and then they come rushing back when I get back to mainland.
You know, that's fine. Everybody needs that place to escape to. That's why I have my brand Happy Place as well, because besides, like, this island has that kind of vibe for a lot of people when they get that ocean in between them and their real job or whatever. But the goal of Black Book back in 2011 when I launched the website was that I wanted to create an online guide for people who couldn't pick up a magazine or a newspaper or a newsletter that kept them in touch with Nantucket on what was hot and new on the island, and then also pulled at their heartstrings when they couldn't be here. So you and I started out as virtual buddies.
Right.
I think it was like, you know, I really think that we actually like maybe met on Twitter, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And then like became friends in real life, which is so cool about relationships nowadays.
No, totally.
They evolve differently, you know?
Absolutely. No, you're right. That was the thing. Like you were, you know, I followed your account. It might have been Instagram, I feel like. And I watched your account explode. It's got 30, 40,000 followers now or whatever. But right, I think that is the thing. Like I was aware of the Black Book blog just because I went for the first time really as an adult in 2008, became obsessed with Nantucket. I'm sure in the same way you did. And then I would just search anything with ACK. And I think I stumbled upon your blog at the time and then the Instagram account. And so when I would hop over to the island, I would, you know, I would know where you were working or something. I would just swing in and say, hey, I follow your account. You know, good to see you. Hope everything's well, that sort of thing. And what we've done, which is miraculous in this day and age, given how bad most people are at social media, I think we actually like each other more after following each other's Instagram account for however many years at this point, you know, than we did before because we didn't even know each other, which that's like the whole essence of how powerful this form of communication is, which is what you've really harnessed because now you do social media, marketing engagement classes, help businesses grow their brands, et cetera. That's your full-time gig now, right?
Yeah, so I left the bar back in so I started my website, and like kind of Gary Vee says, you know, I needed like a side hustle. So mm-hmm. Black Book was my side hustle, and I was still bartending 3 to 4 nights a week at a place called Bentuno. And then after my mom ended up passing away in 2014, it'll actually be 4 years come this April. Mm-hmm. And after she passed away, I kind of recognized, she always wanted me to get out from behind the bar, but I recognized I wasn't going to do well that summer with the whole medicine cabinet behind me when I was having some major grief issues.
Right.
So I left the bar Memorial Day weekend of my 10-year anniversary of being behind
the bar. Oh, my God. So your final weekend was Fagawi, which is the biggest disaster in the history of man.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Just to have the full bookends of it all. And then I said I was going to focus on my writing. So then I had to kind of leap into making this side hustle into my real thing.
What's the most money you've ever made bartending on a night in Nantucket?
Oh my God. I mean, like I could make like, you know, $1,300-$1,400, but I would, one night I was home at midnight after doing that.
Oh my God.
So it's like,
the bars aren't even closed. They're not even open late because it's Massachusetts. So it's like, right, you make that by 12:30 a.m. and you're done.
I'm home hanging out, deciding what I'm going to Instagram the next day. It's like, you know, the money that you can make out here after you establish yourself as a bartender that mm-hmm. people love to come and hang out with and see and whatnot. You know, as my buddy Johnny says, bartending is 90% like personalities and relationships and 10% actually pouring drinks.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, when people would ask me like, what's your favorite drink to make? I'd be like, Bud Light. Like, I'm not here to like make
That's my favorite drink to drink. Perfect.
Is that your favorite drink?
I actually love, hate good beer. I hate good beer more than anything. I just want beer to taste like water. I love Bud Light.
Well, there you go. Bud Light might as well be the official water of Nantucket.
For sure.
And, you know, the other thing, my friend used to have this shirt. It said, mojitos, mo problems. And I also felt very similar to that with mm-hmm. anything muddled. So basically, you know, now where my business and brand has taken me is kind of understanding my company as a media group. So I'm not just, you know, telling you where to sip, shop, and stay, but I tell everybody to do this stuff based on advocacy instead of advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So because I don't trust things like TripAdvisor and Yelp, because I don't know who those people are or those travelers are, why am I going to make them give me my decisions on where to travel to if I don't even know who,
right.
you know, Sugar Pie 33 is.
Right. Like, it does seem like there's a lot of chicanery to that whole thing, doesn't there? Like, you know, you see businesses be like, oh, I was pressured to advertise with this company and then I didn't, and then they wouldn't take down, you know, it gets right. It's tough to figure out who is who.
There's a science to it, you know, like mm-hmm. TripAdvisor and Yelp is a business. Okay. So what happens with businesses? They need to make money.
Mm-hmm.
So money sometimes clouds the whole judgment on whether or not, you know, this is the best thing, because maybe this is the best thing because these people pay for the best placement and these people don't pay for any placement. So they get lost. You know,
right,
so
right.
my goal in what I do with Black Book is that I tell you the places to sip, shop, and stay based around the fact that I sip at the restaurants, shop at the stores, and have stayed at all the hotels. I would mm-hmm. never tell you and your wife to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
Right.
So,
right.
Especially because Nantucket is one of those places that it takes a really long time to get to. So it's like when you get here, you don't want to waste a second. You know, you don't want to mm-hmm. waste a bad dinner when you only have 4 of them.
Totally.
You know, you don't want to go to the top rated Yelp place and then recognize it's because they also pay Yelp the most money.
Right.
Like, this is, it's so interesting the way this trust economy works. And I think, you know, you and I had chatted about my dear friend Jasmine Takamikos of Brand Human and Candor Branding out of New York, who basically changed my life once she showed me her methodology about how we use this trust economy now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Steve, so the trust economy, meaning I like you, I friend you, I trust you, I follow you. And then all of a sudden, the other side of that, I don't like you, I don't trust you, I unfriend you, I unfollow you.
Right.
How quickly that shift goes. You know what I'm talking
about.
Oh,
I know.
Like,
those
moments of like, somebody, you lose faith in somebody quick, like they're gone.
No, right, right. Like, it really is. It's like, right, it could take you so long to build it up, but one stupid post or you start going a different angle and it's gone. And then you're like, oh my God, I hate this
person.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
You gotta be very true and genuine to where you started, but that takes a lot of thought, you know,
mm-hmm.
and thought with as you're building brand and building personal brand takes a lot of work. And guess what? We're living in this age right now where everybody just thinks that it happens instantaneously. But as you and I know, I mean, we're going on 10 years of a virtual/professional friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's why you trust me. That's why you would ask me to be on a podcast, not
right.
because I have X amount of followers, but because you're one of my like true followers, because mm-hmm. you were a follower when I had 200 followers.
I'm an OG,
you know, like,
Black Book follower.
OG,
I appreciate you giving me that shout.
I mean, that's the cool part about this stuff with social media right now, is that you create these digital friendships that actually are true. And when you meet in real life, you have something really interesting to talk about. But how fascinating and sci-fi driven this must have sounded to our
parents. No, I think it's the most fascinating thing on earth. And like we're in season two of the podcast now, and most of my guests, it basically sort of the theme that emerged was like, oh, I have these relationships that are mostly online with all these cool people. Let's bring them in, talk to them in real life, and sort of explore that. And these are all actual, really genuine, powerful relationships in my life. But, you know, a lot of the times it's 99% driven online. You know, it's like you meet someone once, you follow them. Oh, this person seems cool. And then you keep following them. And it turns out when we bring them in and when we talk, it's like, oh, no, this is actually, this validates everything I thought about this relationship.
Totally.
It's real. It's powerful. It's someone I really care a lot about.
And I commend you for doing the podcast thing right now, because I truly believe that listening is the new learning. So when it comes to social media right now, there's such an a saturation of shit out there that's clouding all of our judgments and whatnot, that like listening now and actually deep conversations, whether they be 30 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes, podcasts are really making a digital imprint on people's minds. And so what you'll do right now with these kind of podcasts are you're creating better conversations and dialogues. Like, you're actually, instead of just putting up a pretty sunset and saying vibes, like my least favorite from the thing, I just think that is like as cheesy as it comes.
Right.
Like, you're actually creating context around social media instead of just adding more crap into the system. You're like creating conversations about how do you grow a brand, or how do you find your Instagram followers and their engagement right now. Like, you know, that was what you and I were talking about last time, was a lot about engagement on Instagram because of algorithms and everything changing, you know. So it's like you used to be able to get so X amount of people to just see your posts, and now guess what? Instagram is a business. It's owned by a little thing called Facebook, which owns most of the internet's infrastructure. So if you don't think that you're going to pay to play on these things, you are deeply mistaken.
I know. And so, you know, that's been a really, I feel like that shift has really come to the forefront like the past year or so, because I build up, you know, I've got like 12,000 fans on Facebook. I've got 6,000 or something on Instagram. But when you actually go in and, you know, like, first off, I'm verified on both, which I now realize I think screws you, because I have self-identified to them that I'm a public figure, whatever that means, and therefore I'd be willing to pay for access to the people who already chose to follow my page. You know, like, I think you get so obsessed with getting the badge, but now I realize the badge is actually how I flagged myself, because if I post something on Facebook, if it's not the most viral thing on earth, I mean, it will just die. You watch it die right in front of you, and, you know, no matter how many fans you have, it didn't get to even a fraction of them. It's all pay to play. It's really fascinating.
Totally. It's a science, you know? Like, that's the other thing. Like, this is actually, there are very interesting ways to start diving into how things get higher up on your feed, you know? Like, it's like certain things. Certain things are very, you know, easy for people to say, like, oh, this is going to go viral, if it's like, you know, those Slurpee waves back on Nantucket back in 2015, I think it is. That's my buddy Jonathan. Okay. Sorry about that. So what happened with Jonathan's waves was, he sent me, Jonathan's a surf photographer, okay? Jonathan Nemefro. He's been a surf photographer a long time. And what that actually means is that people trust him when it comes to surf, regardless of what he comes up with, these, you know, these frozen wave photos. Okay. So on a Wednesday, he sends me this photo and he says, hey, listen, Holly, I know you got a bigger following than I do. I took these really cool wave photos. They look like they're frozen. Could you post them on your Facebook and your Instagram and just tag me? And I was like, yeah, you know, cool. Like, these things are crazy. Like, I know you actually took these, because you're not somebody who works with Photoshop. You're somebody who takes surf photos. So why would you all of a sudden make a frozen wave up if it didn't exist? I can see people who understand what kind of viral stuff can go with that, but they're not surf photographers. This is people who are very dedicated to their craft. So he sends me the photo. I put it up on my Facebook. It goes hog wild. Okay. Eric Fisher from, you know, from
OWBC,
Twitter.
So
he picks it up. And then all of a sudden, the Weather Channel picks it up. And then all of a sudden, this post that I have on Facebook has gone viral, you know, 700, 800 shares seen organically by 150,000 people. Jonathan then starts with 2,200 fans on followers on Instagram, okay, mm-hmm. on that Wednesday. By Saturday, when the New York Times picks this up, he's got over 15,000.
Wow.
So what you can see from this thing is that things can go viral and you can get a jump really quick, but you have better already established yourself as something, because if you have, people will then follow you. But if
right.
you have two photos, and like all of a sudden you have a viral thing happen, you're going to go like, you can't.
Or if he just been like a dad who posted photos of his kids who you don't care about because you don't know him or the kids, people would see that account and be like, oh, I'm not following that. I don't care. I just wanted the waves.
It's like, why? Yeah. If Jonathan only posted photos of like random travels or like, you know, like really like low quality images, but like, no, he had built up his brand to 2,000 followers. Then he got that massive fire.
That's
right
so
after,
true.
Like, you know, that digital fire from mm-hmm. there. And then now he's got, the Slurpee waves came back this winter, but then now everybody's taking pictures of them.
Oh,
okay.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you know, he still does. And I launched them again and it got great engagement, not nearly what it did obviously mm-hmm. before, but now there's about six other really talented photographers out here who are also catching great photos of them, you know, but all of a sudden, there's a little bit of a lackluster there of like, how interested are we in this now that everybody can do it?
Mm-hmm.
So what Jonathan did is he actually made a video of it. So he actually took the photos and showed a video of what the Slurpee waves look like and his friends surfing on it, so that he didn't just have the images. He now also had a, 2-minute long video to show people this really happened. This is really what it looked like. There is no photoshopping going into it.
And it is funny,
so
too.
It
does feel like the pace of everything is quickening. Like, right, we do. Now he's going to up the ante. He's going to have a video of his friend surfing in the Slurpee waves, whereas 2 years ago he got to the New York Times and got 15,000 followers out. I don't know how we sustain this pace without our heads just blowing off.
Totally.
You know
how you like, honestly, this is where I'm going with everything right now, Steve, and this is why we're having conversations with this, because while everybody else is getting hyper digital, you know, seeing the value of social media, seeing the power of digital marketing, putting way less money into print and way more money into, the internet kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
like, I've been preaching this for 6 years. So now that that's actually happening, I don't want to do it anymore. Okay?
Yep.
You want to know why? Because I have to do the next thing. And so for me, the next best thing is getting online people offline. So what I'm doing with my website this summer is that I am making it as easy as possible for you to spend as little time as possible on my website to get the max amount of information.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want you looking at your phone. I don't want you sitting on my website and having to stay there in some weird mind, whatever, for like ever, just because I want you to spend as much time on my website as possible. I don't want you to spend time on my website. I don't want you to spend time on my phone. I want you to know the best things to do on this island, and then I want you to go out there and do them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, enough of being on your phone. Like, I created this monster for myself, so now I have to figure out a way to evolve it so I can be more proud of it.
Right. Wow, and you do have one thing you folded in now. Is the Black Book printed edition like part of that? Because it's funny, it came full circle to me. Because like, I grew up going to the Cape in the 80s. We had a little house in Dennisport, and anywhere you'd go, there'd be the stack of Cape Cod guides outside, and where do you go? And then you did it online, and then a couple of years ago, you'd be like, oh, I'm on the ferry getting more Black Books. I'm like, oh, fascinating. She's bringing it back from online to IRL. So that's part of that whole evolution, right?
I was watching all these people on their phone all the time. I was waiting at Cape Air, whether I was waiting at the High Line or whatever it was. And I was like, good, this is working. And then all of a sudden I was like, wow, no engagement with each other. No, like, there's like something about, actually, let me just take it back. My cousin had this really awesome aha moment that he told me when he goes on vacation, he only reads books, okay? Because when he had a Kindle and was looking at a screen, it's like a high-powered CEO out in Laguna Beach, it felt like work to him again.
Mm.
So like looking at a screen feels like work now. So holding something and having something tangible all of a sudden feels like leisure. And like vacation,
It's not connected to any outside source. It's like book is like the Nantucket of media.
Yeah,
like you're separated from all the other crap.
having something tangible that people can pick up also helped me connect to that greater 50 plus demographic who was mm-hmm. very scared by what I was doing because they didn't understand it. But I ended up putting out these print black books that told them a little bit of the hashtags to follow along with or how to find these brands on Instagram, and gave them like the reasons why I tell people where to sip, shop, and stay. Plus, I incorporated 4 months of social calendars that told them good bands at the box, nonprofits to support, cool things to do on the weekends, trunk mm-hmm. shows, all that kind of stuff. So it was like, you know, having the online offline thing has always been really important to me.
Yeah.
And now going into 2018, it's more important than ever to me.
Wow, that's so fascinating. So like, and that you see, so you've ramped this up into like a full scale, full-time job. And you know, one of the things we were talking about is sort of the buzzwords that come and go, but you were like, do not say the word authentic. That has completely lost its meaning, just as influencer has, you know.
It's like a pinata. Like the word authentic is a pinata, and people just beat it until it like literally has no meaning. And then when you open up that authentic pinata, it's just like a deflated human inside.
Right.
It's like there is no such thing as authentic anymore because that word has like lost all of its luster. So like for me, like authentic is not the word, it's genuine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody is genuine, if a person is genuine, if a brand is genuine, if a product is genuine, think about those genuine Levi's patch, you know, it's like, that's when you know it's real. To mm-hmm. me, genuine is way more than new authentic. And like, you know, for me, it's not about collaboration. In other words, that has been like totally like, you know, just beaten to death as well. It's about community. If you have community, you don't need collaboration. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you already have your group around you that supports you and loves you, you don't have to worry about pitching collaborations or the hustle behind it because people already believe in what you do and you already have these people surrounded and wanting to support you. And then when you look at like sexy to me is not like a word I want to be described with, but happy is mm-hmm. the new sexy. So if you are happy, regardless what you look like, how you present yourself, like your inner glow is so much more important right now than your outer glow.
Right.
Like that is actually what shines better for people, especially in this age where nothing is as it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm doing right now is I'm just trying to change the conversation around how people are, you know, describing themselves or using the digital market to present a fake image of themselves. You know, there's
right.
there's so much that is out there that is fake.
You know, you know what's weird too? It's so reductive. Like now you can see, like I see people on TV doing the same. Like once one person gets success with it, God knows whether it's real or fake followers or whatever, but like then you see everyone copy. It's all just becoming a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy. Like I hate it.
Totally. You know what? You can think of my dear friend, Aaron, my dear friend that owns this place, a man ticket that's been in business for 36 years in retail. She always says to me, often imitated, never duplicated.
Mm-hmm.
That's like what you want to go with. Like you want to be the trailblazer that's imitated, but at no means could anyone actually be you or be your business or do what you do at the level that you do it. So that's like, you know, if you can strive for that, then that is like, you know, the new goals per se.
Right.
And also remember, you know, we were chatting a little bit about, I love that we already had this chat, so like it just, you know, throw it in there. Remember when we were chatting about, you know, like my Instagram hack, like how you can tell real followers from fake followers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, so if let's say an account has 55,000 followers, okay? A good amount of number, you know, pretty big, takes a long time to build that, but you know, and they're getting tons of comments and tons of likes, and it seems like they have something going, you know,
mm-hmm.
because it seems like, you know, if 1,000 people like this and there's 70 comments, well, something must be going right. Well, do a little research, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you are a brand looking for another brand to promote your business, look at what their video views are, okay? Because
mm-hmm.
video views do not lie. You can buy likes. You can comment to your heart's content to make it seem like there's a lot more comments than are actually there, but you can't buy video views.
Mm.
So if you have 55,000 followers and you have 700 video views, something's wrong.
Right.
It doesn't matter that you have 2,000 likes on that photo of a sunset. Like something is like your clientele is not engaged.
Right.
So either you did my least favorite thing, which is called the follow unfollow. Have you ever seen that?
That's when you batch follow a bunch of people, hope they follow you back, but then you unfollow them and hope they don't notice, right?
Exactly, my friend. Good
yeah.
for you.
I'm as insane as you are with this.
That, right?
My dream would just be sitting in a Jeep wagon or looking at Nantucket, you know, watching fairies come in and sit there and decipher fake and fraudulent Instagram accounts, that'd be like my dream day. I would love that.
Oh my God. Amazing. Amazing. I love this. Well, listen, like what happens when you follow and unfollow? For people who are mindful, they say, oh my God, this cool account with 40,000 followers is following me. I'll follow them too. They seem like they know what's up. And then you go back in and one day they're following 6,000 accounts and the next day they're back down to 400.
Right.
It's like, wait, what just happened there? That is like a hack that like can definitely help you. But what ends up happening is that you have a lot of people who are not engaged with what you're doing.
Right.
Because they're kind of like, oh, I follow you because you followed me, but it means nothing because I'll actually never go back to your page.
Right. It's not just the act of the follow that matters, right? If it's just garbage in your feed or someone who follows, like I am cautious so much about who I follow because like I do take it as a matter of trust. Like my ethics on this whole thing are if I follow you, like I kind of want to follow you for life because I hate the idea of like, hey, oh, let me check and like follow and then unfollow to me is like, it's so much better to have never followed and been authentic about it than to like meet you at a fundraiser and follow you and then unfollow you the next day. Like that, I can deal with someone not following me. I despise someone who follows then unfollows me. Like that's offensive
to me. It's hurtful. You know
yes.
what I mean? Like
you've rejected my identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, just because I know we're probably coming towards like the end and whatnot, but I wanted to tell you, like, I have an actual virtual Instagram ticket to a class that I'm doing now.
Yes.
So usually on Nantucket, I teach social media marketing to, let's say, a workshop of 12 people. But, you know, for me and for who my followers are, a lot of them live, like, you know, 30% in Boston, 20% in New York. Only about 15% of them actually live on Nantucket, mm-hmm. okay? So now we created with my friend Georgie, who's an incredible Instagram strategist. That's the other thing. No one is an Instagram fucking expert unless your name is Mark Zuckerberg.
Right,
okay?
Right, because he controls the rules.
Don't
we just react to him.
Don't call yourself an Instagram expert. It
totally.
Hasn't even been around long enough for you to do that.
Right.
So, like, you can be a strategist. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. So, like, as an Instagram strategist, my friend Georgie and I lead these workshops, and then I recognize there's so many people that want the actual workshop who can't come to the island, you know, on March 27th. So what we're doing is we added a virtual ticket for this next level Instagram workshop so that you can get the actual workshop, the 45-minute workshop, plus the worksheets sent to you on that night, and then you can digest them when you're ready.
Wow.
Because a lot of people right now just need the education, and that's what we want to provide. I don't want to provide how to get more followers.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to actually take a look into why you're actually doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing it for the right reasons, you don't have to be on every platform. You don't have to be on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, MailChimp, Pinterest, all those things. When you say you have all those things, I worry for you.
Right.
You know, because the thing is that as my friend Jasmine tells me, you need a hero network. Like that one that you like crush and that you do a great job mm-hmm. with, like your, you know, your Instagram might be your hero network, Steve, but your podcast could potentially become your hero network eventually.
My producer, Matt's praying for that.
Shout out, Matt. Keep up the good work.
No.
An idea, you know, you're putting in the work right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's what happens. You don't just have a podcast and it becomes viral. You have a podcast, you have 40 episodes, and then maybe something happens from it, you know?
Right, and then people can explore backwards and be like, oh, that's cool, he talked to cool people, right? It's like the Slurpee waves, like, I'm taking the photos now, and then, right, and then, you know, right, the dream would be 50 episodes in, you make some viral moment with someone, and everyone looks at your podcast, and if they like what they see,
tons of content,
right,
you know, to
right.
go back with, and
yeah.
to relish with you, because
yeah.
you've already put in the work, like,
mm-hmm.
people need to put in the work,
yeah.
and don't keep thinking that it should just happen for you. None of this stuff just happened for you or I.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you and I, like, the reason why people trust me is because I'm going into my 7th season of this.
Right.
And, you know, I have a great friend out here who teaches me a lot. She's a yoga instructor. She started she's one of the founders of the yoga festival with her husband out here. Shout out Nantucket Yoga Festival, July 6th to the 8th, by the way, one of my favorites. But she always tells me that you got to think of things in 3 years, okay? The first year, something creeps. The second year, it steeps. And the third year, it leaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that first year, you're just kind of like doing what you got to do to get around. You know, she also calls it sleeps. It seems like a sleepy year.
Mm-hmm.
But that second year with something steeping, it's like a tea bag. Like you have to wait. You're marinating.
Right.
You're adding. And that third year, you can probably take a leap and start to make some money for this from the foundation that you set. And if you don't leap, you should look into doing something else because maybe this isn't working for you.
Right. So, but so many people expect instant results or they quit too early because they went in with false expectations, whether it's any of these platforms,
totally.
You know, right. It really.
Totally.
Yeah. It takes time, even though
We've been poisoned by the thought that this just happens because that's how it seems like an Amazon package gets delivered to you the next day mm-hmm. or that one viral thing for some person got them 13,000 followers and that you deserve that as well. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's not how it works.
Right.
You need to do the work and then you can see what happens from there. But don't just do the work, love the work, and then things like this can evolve and happen for you.
Amazing. Holly, great conversation. I'm glad we get to do this again. I really wanted to share your story with everybody because it's so cool.
And
I couldn't respect what you're doing more. You're really, you know, as much about this stuff as anyone I know. I think it's great. It comes from an organic place and there's no shortcuts, any of that sort of stuff. So this, what I'll try to plug for you online again, is just the workshop. Just how do we get in on that? Because like, I want to check that out.
Definitely. I'm going to send you I'll send you the link so you can put it in show notes or whatnot.
Yes.
So if you go to Nantucket Black Book on Instagram or on Facebook, you'll be able to find me there. It's @BlackBook on Twitter, old school because it was too long, remember, for Nantucket Black Book to be all one word. And then, you know, if you want to email me or just kind of understand like a little bit more of where I'm coming from, it's holly@nantucketblackbook.com. And if you want to check out the website of all things hot and cool on Nantucket and you want to start planning your trip around all the places that I advocate for, you can go to nantucketblackbook.com.
Great. Amazing. Holly, great talking to you. We appreciate it.
Dave, I can't wait. When are you coming back up here?
I gotta figure that out. Yeah, I gotta get there this summer. We gotta figure out that plan like pronto because it's funny.
Okay,
everything gets booked up earlier and earlier. I notice.
Quick plug. You can go to the Wolf Cottages. They're the Wharf Cottages that are down on the old steamship and straight wharf and whatnot. Excuse me, but you can head down there and you can actually bring dogs with you and basically feel like you're like staying in a floating boat.
Oh my God, I love that idea. Ryder's going to love it.
Check it out.
Ryder's going to love it.
All right,
thanks, Holly. See ya.
Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. This episode was recorded, edited, and mixed by Matt Onimus. Our executive producers are me, Matt, and Ahmad Asghar. Our vice president of news is Byron Harmon, and our vice president and general manager is Lou Leone. Binge Talking is part of the Fox 5 Podcast Network. I'm Steve Lacy, and if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit me up on Twitter, @StephenLacy, or on Instagram, Steve Lacy, STEVELACY. In the meantime, stay tuned for our next episode.